Hey, the start of something special right here, man. Let's go.
Number one fantasy player right here.
Got past the line. Shut up. Know the rules.
I just want to say this to you. Right now, best in the game. I know.
Welcome to the Pod After Touchdown Fantasy Football Podcast. I am your host, Andrew Mackins, joined by my co-host, Sam Hoppin, who I think has a little treat for us.
Well, not necessarily a treat for you, a treat for me, but you know...
Or is this a trick, since we're coming up on Halloween?
Oh, very good. Way to go. Well, as you know, as all of our listeners know, fantasy football can be a fairly stressful endeavor, as much fun as we have. Unfortunately, in our league of record, you are currently riding a 4-game losing streak, and I may be experiencing a 2-game losing streak as well. So I thought I'd start this off with a little bit of therapy for the both of us. We could both share with each other what we like about the other person's team and just give each other some fun compliments about what they've done so far this season. So I'll start off, and again, we're talking about a league record.
This seems like a trap, but you're going first, so I'll...
I just want to point out, you started 2-1, which is really good. Like, that's so good. A lot of people would really enjoy having that.
It's better than 0-3.
Here's another part of your team. Like, you drafted Evan Engram, who is surprisingly one of the not shitty tight ends in the league right now. So I just want to commend you in these woes that you're having, that you do still have bright spots and are a fairly good fantasy football player.
Oh, thank you, Sam. And I know I was probably stressing out to you too much this weekend, which is probably what inspired this whole segment. And you've mentioned that before, so I really do appreciate that. It makes me feel nice and warm inside.
Well, good.
So if there's... Obviously, I could... give you glowing reviews about your team, and I don't even have to be prepared to tell you. Obviously, Dalvin Cook, Chris Godwin, excuse me, Lamar Jackson, just envisioning all those rushing yards for a second there. Who else you got?
Josh Jacobs. This is riveting stuff. Why don't we move on? But I appreciate
a lot of great players. Alvin Kamara is a keeper. This has kept him in championship contention year in and year out, folks. If I haven't brought it up before, we're bringing it up now. And this is why Sam writes the articles and I just talk on the microphone.
Anyway, you talked about trick-or-treats. And with our kickoff question, which we'll start off with, it's Halloween week. Ooh, spooky.
And this game is underway.
So the kickoff question today is, what player are you most scared to have on your team for the rest of the season? Who's someone that's maybe played well that you think could be a total almond joy in your bag of candy? Or
wait, is that a good thing or a bad thing?
That's a bad thing. Almond joy is trash.
I thought you were saying a joy to have in your lineup for a second. Oh, God, but almond joy is not top tier candy.
So I'll start off. And my guy, you Freudian slipped here, is Chris Carson. I don't have him in any leagues this year, but he's got a tough upcoming schedule. Like, this offense has been clicking on nearly every cylinder so far with how efficient they are. Their upcoming schedule is Tampa Bay, great run defense. San Francisco, another great run defense. A bye, which doesn't help. Philly, another outstanding run defense. And Minnesota, who is a great run defense and a great defense all around. So I think these are games where, yes, the Seahawks are going to want to run the ball. They're one of the most run-heavy teams in the NFL. But Chris Carson, I'm not especially excited for his end-of-season outlook.
Yeah, I've got a player in mind, and I think with that schedule, definitely Chris Carson, a player that it would be scary to keep in your lineup. But the guy I have is part of an offense that I think has some ghosts around it, potentially. Spooky question here. Should we be scared about a Falcons, quote-unquote, organic tank? They have one win at this point, or they have one win, right?
They have one win.
We have one win at this point, so... It's likely that if they keep playing like this, they're going to have a top five pick in the draft. And if there's someone that's really on their radar, you know, you might as well just keep kind of coasting at this point. Now, the offense has still been productive, even with, you know, Matt Schaub in the lineup this last week. Julio had a respectable game yards-wise, but they the next 6 weeks, so talking schedule, like they play the Saints twice. They play the Panthers twice, which even though they got wrecked by the Niners, who the Falcons also play, I think the Panthers have a respectable defense, and those could be some tough divisional matchups. And the only good matchup in those next 6 weeks, which is basically the stretch leading up to your fantasy playoffs, is Tampa Bay. And so that's like one good game in there, but the defense is so bad, they could keep scoring whilst losing all these games, but I think this is most likely to impact Calvin Ridley at the end of the day, and I would be scared of him. And just the fact that, like, looking at the way we cover the Falcons and the way we talk about them in shootouts and matchups, we're actually 3 years removed from that Super Bowl appearance in 2016, and I think we're still, like, almost looking at the Falcons with rose-colored glasses. So I like that you brought up this question.
Yeah, no, the Falcons are a great point, and I pointed out last week that at this point, it's almost good to stream defenses against them because they are so terrible. Now, you do worry about the
garbage time.
The garbage time, the weapons that they do have, because they do have the ability to put up yards and points. But again, like the Seahawks, I tweeted out earlier this week that the Seahawks only had one sack over the last 3 weeks. So streaming them against the Falcons might not be the best idea for that reason. Well, they forced a bunch of turnovers and they were able to get to Matt Schaub. So it is at this point an offense that you can't exploit. Now, we'll see how long Matt Ryan is out. Maybe if that continues, then it's a more exploitable matchup. But before we get into our DiGiorno players, I wanted to do an onside kick question.
A bonus kick,
and because this is something that I've started to notice, again, in our league of record, in several leagues that I'm in as well, and get your thoughts on it. And I want to see, you know, I'm wondering if there's something to holding on to two defenses throughout the year. Now, this is assuming you don't have someone like the Patriots or maybe even the 49ers defense, but it seems like it's maybe becoming more of a common strategy when you can, you know, for example, pick up the Steelers defense a couple weeks ago, knowing that they're playing Miami, or picking up the Jets defense before this past weekend, knowing that they're playing Miami next week. So you have the ability to, quote unquote, stream ahead, if you will.
Yeah.
And granted, you're using that bench spot, but, you know, who are you using that bench spot for? And a lot of this depends on your league, I think, and how many bench spots you have, how many players are, you know, if it's a 12, 14, 16 team league, a lot of it depends on that and how your roster construction is. But it's one of those things where if you notice other people in your league doing it, you're almost forced to do it, because then you're just going to be left with the absolute bottom of the barrel of defenses.
Or you're shelling out fab on defenses week of.
It saves you fab. It saves you a waiver priority when you have the team playing the Bengals or the Dolphins or whoever in that matchup. So you can say, you know, maybe you're not holding on to a Tony Pollard or someone, but you then save the fab so that later on, if Zeke gets hurt, you can spend it on him. I said a lot there, but I'm curious just what you think about this, because I'm torn as to what, how I feel about
it. So I think it can be done, especially if you're antsy and not willing to hold on to those lottery ticket players early on. Because, like, with waiver wire ads in general, you have to make in fantasy a quick evaluation on is this guy going to be worth holding on to, or am I going to, you know, wait 4 weeks and then in week five, then he shows up. So it's a tough thing with whether it's worth holding on to depth, but I would say, we in the fantasy community talk about streaming quarterbacks and streaming tight ends a lot, because it's one position that you have to fill every week and you want to maximize those matchups. So I think you could treat defense just as easily. Like, we know people are streaming defenses, but going in advance, like you said, and holding on to that second defense, like taking it to the next level, just like if you're stashing a quarterback or stashing a tight end for a juicy matchup.
Yeah.
In a 14-team league I'm in, I actually have three defenses on my roster right now, because I'm like, well, all of these defenses have some matchups coming up throughout the rest of the season. And I think between these three, I can just hold on to them. And that's a league with seven bench spots, so I've got a little bit more wiggle room. But
yeah. And I think, you know, to your point too, like, if you are streaming tight end or quarterback, like, this is a strategy you can employ with that too, of making sure you're getting the guy that you really want a week in advance. Now, if nobody else in your league is doing it, then you probably don't have to do that because you're not competing with other people. But majority of people in leagues are streaming defenses and don't have that one locked and loaded team every week. So it's, you know, again, I've even seen the guy with the Patriots defense pick up the Jets defense because of how good their schedule is. So again, people with these teams that have an amazing defense already are doing it. So anyway, why don't we get into some guys that got shut down by the defense, if you will.
All right, Sam, I'll let you start. I got to work up the energy for mine.
Yeah, this was someone you mentioned earlier in the episode. We were trying to perk each other up. Chris Godwin took an absolute dump, just let Mike Evans have all of the catches and the yards and the touchdowns and everything, and just did absolutely nothing against a Titans team that is supposed to be trash. But Chris Godwin was the dumpster fire trash this week on the Tampa Bay Buccaneers.
Yeah, there's a lot of back and forth with those guys, those receivers. You don't know what you're going to get sometimes, but not nearly as bad as this guy. And we're talking about Ty fucking Johnson. If you have Ty Johnson on your roster right now, it's because you probably spent 80 to 90% of your remaining fab, which could have been $100 at this point, and he completely crushed your dreams. He was supposed to get all the carries after what he did the previous week spelling carry on, and he ends up with 0 points really in like the first couple quarters, but at the end of the game, 25 rushing yards, one catch, 13 receiving because of Trey Carson. I don't give a fuck what his name is.
He was on the Packers.
You got fucked by Matt Patricia, and it's just fucking annoying. It's ridiculous. I can't believe this in fantasy.
Yeah.
Pile of shit.
The whole Ty Johnson thing, I think, again, segues into another question that I have, you know, philosophical question regarding fantasy about spending fab, because
heard a lot about this in our league of record as well.
Yeah, and, you know, players go out and spend all this fab when a top running back goes down and expects for one guy to slot in, but you never really know when that's going to happen. Like, there are players like Alexander Mattison or Tony Pollard, who I mentioned, who we think, yes, should be the guy that just you lift and shift into that same role.
Lift and shift, I like
but that. But the coaching doesn't see it that way. They want to mix in other players. They want to change up the way that they run the team, almost. So, you know, I'm wondering if, again, from your perspective, if you think it's even worth spending on these high-priced guys that, you know, come out of nowhere because of an injury, as opposed to using your fab in small increments to take a chance on a guy that, like, went off in 1 week and maybe can keep doing it, or maybe not. Like, Terry McLaurin, like, he went off in 1 week and you might have spent $8 to $10 on him and he's turned into an absolute star. Whereas you're spending 50%+ of your budget on Ty Johnson because you think he can step into that role. As opposed to these guys who are doing well in the role that they already have and potentially producing later on.
Yeah, it is tough, and I think a lot of it's based on whatever your current situation is. Like, the one league I shelled out and got Ty Johnson, I've been struggling at running back all season. So I think it's understandable to go after a guy when your situation, you know, isn't great. So it's all about your comfort level with your team, first and foremost.
That's true.
I think shelling out early on in the season is important because some of those trends will stick, like George Kittle last year, or if no one had Patriots defense before week one and you look at that 7 week schedule, like that's something that's worth investing heavily in if you, it's all about what you believe in too. Like,
right.
You believe in that schedule, and they shut down the what we thought was a full strength Steelers team week one. I thought that put a lot of stock. I put a lot of stock in that. So with like a running back like Ty Johnson, it was probably a little bit overblown, the situation, because of the coaching, like you mentioned. And then even a situation like Wayne Gallman, he's coming in, he's replacing like the work for Saquon Barkley, and it turned out it was only like one good week. I mean, that one good week could have won you a game in your season.
I mean, part of that too was he did get injured, but Saquon Barkley came back a lot quicker than people expected. Even if you did invest in Wayne Gallman, like you might have only, had he stayed healthy, you might have only gotten him for a couple more weeks.
Right, but that, and like he could have had three more bad games. Like he had one really good game and a good matchup, and you don't know what would have happened those next three games. Right. So it's, I think it's very situational based, and what's tough in the beginning of the year is like, well, I want to wait until like that obvious thing comes near the playoffs, but you don't know what your team's going to look like come the playoffs.
Or
like,
you have to. There's also no guarantee that something like this happens this late in the season.
Yeah. And so those early flashes, like you have to invest in them now if you believe it can continue or has a chance of continuing, because that's the only time you can get those players, like with McLaurin and Marquise Brown. So hopefully between that and streaming defenses, you've got some good management tips, all you listeners out there. But let's do some quick reviews of what we were looking for in week 8.
Yeah, so why don't we talk about my shootout, because it involves the team that Ty Johnson plays for, and that was the Giants versus Lions in a shootout. And aside from the 49ers Panthers, which was obviously very lopsided, it was the highest scoring game of the day, 31-26 in favor of the Lions. Now, there were some nobodies that scored, like Marvin Hall, Darius Slayton. I don't know, again, how that happened. but this Lions backfield, like we talked about, is a total shit show. Like, you cannot fall into the sunk cost fallacy. And you've got to, I don't want to say get rid of Ty Johnson, but you can't trust him in your lineup for another weeks until something gets sorted out. Because, again, we're recording this Monday night. The trade deadline is tomorrow, so something could happen in the, you know, by the time we get this posted. But that Lions defense is a mess, or excuse me, backfield is a mess. They were one of the least efficient offenses rushing in the NFL before that, with 3.6 yard per carry. So I don't want any part of it.
Yeah, and I think the biggest takeaway from that is not just avoid them, but you know, Matt Stafford could be a good option if he's out in there, because he can throw the ball. He's had great statistical seasons in the past.
This Marvin is one Hall, of his best statistical seasons.
Yeah, he's been doing great so far.
He's been playing great.
He's got good weapons. Marvin Hall's good for one or two 40-plus yard touchdowns a year. I think Darius Slayton is actually a bit more interesting in terms of deeper league flex appeal, because we've seen it in a couple games now, and I heard in the broadcast that he obviously has like practice squad level chemistry with Daniel Jones.
Wow,
so Daniel Jones is familiar with him from even before coming into the lineup. So I think that's interesting. But yeah, there's some good options there that we can take away from that shootout. My shootout, I said, can I say Bucks Titans? And I suppose the answer was yes. Mainly because of Mike Evans, who went off again, and it's these boom games that are going to help him get to 1,000 yards in his, what is, fifth or sixth consecutive season. Ryan Tannehill, I believe, went over 300 yards. Jameis did too, but Jameis is so up and down. It's just unbelievable to watch him hit Mike Evans on these throws and also have a football hit him in the face and fumble it away to the Titans. But Titans defense is no slouch. So, they let up so much to Mike Evans, but I'm not surprised that in turn they shut down Chris Godwin that you mentioned in our DiGiorno players.
Yeah, you mentioned how up and down Jameis Winston has been, and you know, his performances at face value may be a little bit up and down, but he's actually been a solid fantasy quarterback. So since finishing weeks 1 and 2 outside the top 20, He's actually been the number five quarterback in points per game, including two finishes in the top four and none lower than 15. So like,
I can't handle like, well, the numbers bear out, but like he looks like absolute shit on Sundays. I can't handle it. I don't understand it.
And it, you know, one other nut, the game that Ryan Tannehill had, it was so weird. Like at one point he had two touchdowns and I was super thrilled because I had him in the lineup. And then I was like, oh wait, he's only got 24 yards passing. That can't be right, but it was. So
yeah, it's because of all those Jameis turnovers that put him in scoring position. It's ridiculous, and the Titans are also ridiculous because they're going to end up at like 9-7 with just like having certain games fall into their lap. Anyway, let's look at matchups. It's more specific, like player or unit matchups, and you had one.
Yeah, so you mentioned that the Titans' D is no slouch. The Saints' D is no slouch either. They shut down the Cardinals. The Cardinals only had 237 yards of total offense. This defense is just so good. It makes this one of the most complete Saints teams that you've seen in a while. Now, they might have had better overall, you know, teams or whatever, but that's because the offense has been so good, but this defense is carrying them, and I would not want to play many people against the Saints D in the future.
Yeah, I had an interesting matchup against a tough defense as well, but and it was Bears defense. They have allowed points to running backs the past couple weeks, so I was interested to see how Melvin Gordon and Austin Eckler did against the Bears D, and this just ended up being a really gross, low-scoring affair. 11 total rushes, apparently, with Gordon getting 10 touches and Eckler getting 5 touches. So I was very confused by that in terms of why wouldn't the Chargers be able to do more. And just to bear that out a little bit farther, I have a tweet from Rich Rebar at Lord Reebs, and he said, the Chargers rushing yards the past 4 weeks, like the whole team rushing yards, 35, 32, 39, 36, a combined 63 attempts for 142 yards, which comes out to 2.25 yards per carry. They are the first team to rush for fewer than 40 yards in four straight games since 1946. Ugh. We're in the middle of World War fucking II when this god-awful dumpster fire that couldn't run the ball in like the running era of football as we know it couldn't get 40 yards in a month, like in a single game within a month-long stretch. The Chargers have 6 rushing first downs over this span, the fewest in the league. 6 first downs across that month. That's one fewer first down than Gus Edwards has in that same span, and he has 19 rushing attempts. It's fucking ridiculous. I think that Melvin Gordon really fucked things up by them coming back in and Anthony Lynn feeling like he has to force it. I love Melvin Gordon. I love what he did for Wisconsin, and I feel bad for him, actually, because he said, like, yeah, this... He knows already, based on how the Chargers have been playing, that it hasn't played out well for him and him not being in shape. But because you know he's not in shape and he's been a detriment to the team, more or less, they need to get Eckler the ball more. And he was so successful early on. I just need to see a change. And this was not inspiring, but I'm going to keep rolling Eckler out there.
Yeah, not great, Bob. that's all I have to say about that. So for my player that I was looking at, Tevin Coleman. Have a day, Tevin Coleman. Ooh-wee. 118 total yards and 4 touchdowns. Just absolutely tore this Panthers defense apart. He is the guy in San Francisco. He's showing that Breida left with a leg injury again because he is trying to set a record for most games left due to injury. But Tevin Coleman is a fantastic player. I think, again, we talk about guys that are scary for the second half of the season. I think if I don't
have him... He's going to be a nightmare for defenses.
He's a nightmare for defenses. He's a nightmare for fantasy players that don't have him on their team. So, again, he's been having a great season since he's been back from injury, and really just love seeing him actually succeed outside of the putrid Falcons offense.
Yeah, I mean, we know from when he was at the Falcons that We love Kyle Shanahan. He's a genius of sorts, and he's really, you know, making that running game flourish. Now, the matchup I was looking at was a defensive unit that I thought was getting some pop in the last couple weeks. Taking a look at how they're doing right now, and that's the Steelers against the Dolphins. And I think I said some of this last week, but if they don't get a defensive TD or a shutout and 5+ sacks, it's going to be a disappointment. Like, I expected a complete bloodbath against the Dolphins, but for what I think we haven't been paying attention to is the Dolphins are getting just a little bit better every week. And right now, it is 14-3, Dolphins in the lead in Pittsburgh, and the Steelers have 5 fantasy points with 14 points allowed, 1 sack, and they're somewhere in that 100 to 199 total yards allowed range. So,
would you believe me if I said the Dolphins defense had more points than the Steelers at this
fucking point? Mason Rudolph should just not be out there throwing the ball. They are apparently really suffering by not having Jalen Samuels run the Wildcat, but I digress. That was a bad pick for player to watch, especially because it was on Monday night. Let's move on to... Well,
so one quick thing I want to mention, and part of this goes back to, you know, a devil's advocate of why you might not want to hold on to 2 defenses because it may not work out.
It could change on a dime.
I could change on a dime, but you said you were looking for a defensive touchdown. So far, the Dolphins have played 6 games, and the only team that they've allowed a defensive touchdown to is the Patriots back in Week 2 when they allowed 2. No other defense has scored a defensive touchdown against the Dolphins this year. Now, granted, the Bills had a kickoff, onside kick return touchdown last week, which was extremely fluky, but it's one of those things where you can't depend on a defensive score to lift your defense in fantasy.
Right. But still, we thought a putrid offense.
Yes.
Should have 5 sacks in this game.
Should. But they don't.
This is bad. Okay, let's move on to Week 9 for real now. You have a matchup that you're interested in here.
Yeah, so this is Odell Beckham Jr. The whole Browns team had high expectations for this year, but they just have not played well. I don't know what's going on with Freddie Kitchens. The kitchen's way too hot for him.
Stop.
You got to get out of there. But they play the Browns, or excuse me, They're playing themselves, kind of.
They play the Browns of the AFC West.
They play the Broncos this upcoming week. OBJ has not played well, obviously, but Chris Harris on the other side has shut down some players this year. He shut down T.Y. Hilton this past week. So, again, people are potentially expecting for things to get better for the Browns, and that's not a guarantee. Like, especially for Odell Beckham Jr., I think the one bright spot on the Browns right now is Nick Chubb.
Question. Is it a guarantee that Chris Harris is still on the Broncos by the time this game is played?
That is a great question. The rumors are swirling as far as whether he'll be on the team. But if he is still on the team, again, I think that matchup could be a great one to see if OBJ can even get something going.
God, well, he hasn't done much this year other than against the Jets, so I'm not holding my breath. But... I'm going to take another stab at an interesting defense to watch in a matchup, and this is going to be the Patriots defense versus Lamar Jackson. Now, we've talked about Lamar Jackson a ton. We know he's great. I already mentioned him on this episode, and I did not plan on that. We get it. But the Patriots are known as taking away the best player on the field, and obviously Lamar Jackson is that player, and there's a graphic this week against the Browns that they showed they're great against young QBs at home. QBs that are like under age 24, which is probably a weird cutoff. But Lamar Jackson's 22. He was very fumble prone last year. And obviously the Pats are way over indexing on their turnovers. So I'm curious to see if the Patriots will capitalize or if the Ravens are going to be a bit rested off the bye. They, you know, maybe they're, you mentioned in the past, like bye weeks don't necessarily give you more time to prepare, but It's going to be in Baltimore as well. This game's in prime time, so we're all going to get to watch it and see, is the Patriots D going to start to regress, or is it going to be taking people to fantasy championships?
Yeah, the whole Belichick taking away the best player on the other team, I think it's going to be extremely fascinating to see, because he's never played against Lamar Jackson. The closest thing he's come to is Josh Allen, and Josh Allen isn't, I don't think, nearly the runner or the passer that Lamar Jackson is or has been this year.
Did he ever coach against Michael Vick?
I don't know.
NFL research and figure that out.
Yeah, I don't know. But again, this defense has been outstanding for the first half of the season. I'm with you. This is going to be a fun game to watch. Again, if you know, people are talking, if there's any AFC team to even compete with the Patriots, if not the Chiefs because of a hobbled Patrick Mahomes, then the Baltimore Ravens are the one to do that. But the last team that Lamar Jackson played was the Seahawks, and they face a Bucs defense who is allowing everything in the air, and the Seahawks have Russell Wilson, who only threw the ball 20 times this past week, somehow, against the Falcons.
Ew.
But this might actually be a game in which the Seahawks are forced to throw the ball. I think it could be a shootout. We've seen what, like, you know, we talked about it earlier, what Jameis Winston can do. He puts up a ton of passing yards despite how many mistakes he makes, and has the ability to put up points on the board. So, you know, we thought that they would exploit the Falcons secondary, but they only threw the ball again 20 times. But this Bucs run defense will force them to actually use Wilson like they should and pass the ball, throw it to Tyler Lockett, to DK Metcalf, these big guys that can get past the safeties. And, you know, I think it'll be fun. I think there'll be a ton of points to be had in this game from both sides of the fantasy football.
Yeah, I hope so. I think it'll be nice to see Mike Evans have some back-to-back blow-up games potentially. Damn, we really just love the Tampa Bay Buccaneers on this podcast, don't we? They've got some electrifying players like Mike Evans, and Chris Godwin's been great this season, but it's also a comedy of errors. Like, mostly coming from Jameis, of course.
Yeah.
But what are the odds that you think he throws a screen pass right into Clowney's face? Like,
pretty good.
Over 50%.
Yeah.
It might throw off the shootout vibe of this game, but it'll force them to throw the ball more. So my shootout, I'm actually, you know, this one I wouldn't normally look at and be automatic about, but I'm feeling good about it, and it's Texans-Jags. Now, we've put Texans in here because of Watson's wild plays before, but we've also got Minshew Mania, who had a great game last week against the Jets, but just based on last week, you can see the Jags have some wide receiver depth, and Minshew's able to find these guys. It's not just DJ Chark. He's actually hitting guys like Chris Conley and Keelan Cole. I don't know if D.E. Westbrook's going to be available, but on the flip side, I think Hopkins can beat any Jags cornerback on this team with Jalen Ramsey gone.
But they have A.J. Boo.
Oh, gosh, Halloween. Okay, fuck that. No. Booyah isn't going to scare Hopkins. I think what's interesting is the Jags' D-line has been really good and consistent. The Texans need Tunsil to play in this game so we don't get a repeat of Week 2 where the final score was 12-13. And I think that, you know, because the Texans have can have that high-powered offense, but you've got Minshew Mania, it's a huge game for the Jags to come in and potentially take over the division or at least stay in contention before going into that Week 10 bye.
Yeah,
And it's a London game. Anything goes in London as far as I'm concerned. It's the Jags' second home, and you know, someday we might even see them move there, which would be really weird, but I digress. I am really excited for this matchup.
Yeah, it starts at 8:30 Central Time, so we have football from 8:30 a.m. to 10:30 p.m. It's going to be a great day. This is going to be an awesome game to watch. I'm excited. It is the home away from home for the Jags, so I think they have a legitimate shot. The Colts are starting to, you know, pull away a little bit, but they are still vulnerable. It'll be really fun to watch. As far as the player that I'm looking for, This is a fellow that played in London a couple weeks ago, and that's Josh Jacobs. He's been playing so well all year. You've seen the highlights of him breaking off some long runs, trucking Adrian Amos, and he's got a decent matchup against the Lions, which isn't tough by any means. I just really want to see him get his and like have a blow up game, because I don't, you know, he's had a couple 2-touchdown games, but he hasn't been like the number one overall scorer yet. And he's certainly shown the potential to do that. I don't think that John Gruden necessarily trusts him fully yet, because he hasn't, you know, he hasn't seen like 80%+ of the snaps. They're still working in Washington and Rashard. And part of that might have been due to the shoulder injury that he was dealing with this past week. But the point still stands that he's been playing absolutely phenomenal, is in contention for Rookie of the Year at this point. Offensive Rookie of the Year, at least. And, you know, again, I think the Raiders play one of the easiest run schedules down the stretch, so really could be a potential league winner for some folks in the latter half of the year.
Yeah, despite not being an absolute stud yet, he has been the best rookie running back by far when we talk about who you're gonna, you know, put stock in without any vision of what, or any evidence of what they can do in the NFL. So yep. I think that's a good point. And a lot of opportunity for him going forward. And you know what? I'm going to double down on the Raiders here, because I'm looking at a player this week that I hope to see continued success, and that's Tyrell Williams, someone that, you know, another making you feel good about fantasy point. You mentioned this guy way back before the season started as a good player to draft in later rounds. So they're spicy with that schedule, both on the rushing front and the passing front. It's for the next 4 weeks: Lions, Chargers, Bengals, Jets. So sounds pretty good, especially those Bengals and Jets matchups. And I think that Tyrell Williams, based on, you know, he had an injury in there, but every game that he's played, I'm pretty sure in half point PPR, he's had double digit points. So I think he's flex worthy every week going forward until he's not. I'm sure, you know, part of the reason Jacobs hasn't been as big of a winner yet as you think, or that you may have hoped, is because Gruden wants to throw the ball downfield.
Yeah.
And you can see that with them targeting Waller and targeting a guy like Tyrell. So I'm excited to see him continue to ball out. And he has a TD in every game he's played so far as well. Yeah. So that's a good way to get to double-digit points.
Yeah. The Oakland Raiders, you know, as we're talking about them, they've got Darren Waller, too, who's been a great story this season, got paid, you know, overcoming the drug abuse and all that sort of stuff. You know, the Raiders are kind of a poor, albeit a very poor man's New Orleans Saints, because they have those three core players that really the offense runs through in Waller, Tyrell Williams, and Josh Jacobs. So, you know, next year this team could be even friskier. You never know what's going to happen. I think, again, it'll be fun to watch them the rest of the season. They've impressed a lot of people so far, being 3-4. I think everyone expected them to be closer to 1-6 or 0-7. But again, a lot can happen over the next couple of weeks. A lot can happen over the next 24 hours from the trade deadline. A lot Ooh-wee. Can happen over the next 6 days until we do our next podcast.
A lot better happen in the next 2 hours with this Steelers defense. My God.
But until then, you can follow me on Twitter at Sam Hoppin, my co-host Andrew Mackins at Andrew Mackins, our producer Garner at Garnther, and the podcast at Pod After TD. And until then, the Adam Vinatieri kick is good.